Blog Talk Radio.
It's been 2 weeks, hasn't it? You're growing a little fuzz on the back of your neck, and it's time to return to the barbershop. I found Alfred. He's safe. We got him in front of the fireplace with a fresh mug of hot cocoa wrapped in a Snuggie. And if you have any questions for him, he'll be on 310-982 and 4273 to get through. Now, it's spring break season. It's allergy season. It's daylight savings in the equinox. And people are hanging up their New Year's resolutions and putting down that disgusting tofu nonsense. My niece's hamster is balling tax refund style with a fresh new cage and mad crawl space. And our eyes are fixed on the television waiting to see what happens with marriage equality. Now, I say this should have already been normal from the day marriage became a part of the state, because everybody that lives, works, eats, sleeps, and spends their Sundays rearranging their X-Men cards collection in the state should be able to join that party and dip into the punch bowl of marriage. In the barbershop today, I'm actually going to go ahead and call it Haircuts for Equality Day. If you kiss somebody of the same gender, you get 50% off your haircut and a Scarlet A t-shirt. And I'm substituting the Craig Watch segment here, where I respond to Christian book hustler William Lane, because he's hilarious, with some marriage equality dialogue. So I'm going to cut that segment, bring it into equality. And I want to hear what Alfred thinks on that. And I know he's going to be pragmatic about it. And I want to get my co-host from the Queen's English podcast, the LGBT show, Annihilation, on there. There's a has a lot to say. Annihilation has a lot to say. Very smart. This show, I want to dig into authority, damsel in distress tropes response. New Hampshire votes to prohibit private prisons. I want to look into that article. Scottish church could have Jedi weddings. That kid that had the killer shirt on in court and flipped off the family. Oh, yeah, that little fucker. Marriage equality instead of Craig. And hopefully I can get Alfred in and have him talk about his wedding, because he missed the last show, and I really wanted to hear that. And if we can revert back to that Milgram experiment towards the end, I'd really like to get that in. And you know what I'm going to say, folks? Check those archives. You know that. Kim just hosted the Religion and Black Privilege, where, of course, in the second hour, we get one of those vicious Florida lightning storms, and the dog is near me barking at the thunder, so I had to mute my phone. And but that show, it was a very good round table. Of course, Raina was kicking game. I just want to listen. I got to contribute something, but I like to just listen to Raina talk. And run it back to the RSS feed and listen to Women's Rights to Violence Against Women Act, legalizing tetrahydrocannabinol. That's the acidic function of the functioning product in marijuana. And in one of these shows, I finally got to hear Raynor tell a caller what I've been wanting to hear for months. I actually am a scientist. You know, when the caller is talking bullshit, I want to hear her say that, and she did, and I enjoyed it. I started bugging out like it was a playoff game, and she threw a touchdown pass. I loved it. Oh, is that Anaya?
Yep. It gave you life.
How you doing?
As I talked to you earlier.
Yeah, I was having trouble connecting to you, man. My computer was like, you can't connect to the Facebooks right now. It's like, Jesus Christ, I can't figure this thing out. and also run it back and check out Kim did the It's Okay Not to Believe episode. That was a warming show, folks, all right? And, you know, you can have a warming show. It doesn't always have to be this anger, all right? Tough guy, you can get your emotions out there and take off your gosh darn little alpha shell. You don't have to be that guy all day. I like that show a lot. And check out the atheist. No, No, you can take off the football pads. It's all right. It's okay to be atheist. All right? You know, smell some roses. Enjoy yourself. And check out the Atheist Bible Study, Ignored Scriptures. I like listening to Mario. Mario is fun to listen to. After a few minutes, you get the distinct feeling that he has a biologically fascinating low tolerance for silly bullshit. I like him. And I know cats, they hear what I say, and you can draw some logical conclusions. I talk on patriarchy and homophobia. I'm interested in climate change and all that hippie stuff, but I don't stay in the bubble. On the last Rhymecast episode, I had my dude LG drop a segment on pro-gun talk. I'll have a dude on that and let him speak candidly on my show because I don't beef like that. I don't like putting up a fence and like I will never talk to them and only talk to people I already agree with. I can't do that. And because civil discourse, it does not hurt. Shout out to the folks over there at Atheism Plus. And Naya, helping me out here. How you doing, man? How's the day rolling for you?
I'm fine. Ready to get on in on this topic. It's funny because we just finished recording not too long ago, and I just recently, of course, had more events due to the topic. So I'm a little anxious to share that with you and get your opinion on it.
Okay, and I keep referencing you by your stage name. Should I just go government name here? I'm acting like I'm introducing you to a stage show.
Oh, no, you're fine. I'm definitely going to use Anaya for anything that I do as far as this goes. So definitely, especially since we're also kind of cross-referencing Queen's English podcast. So,
yeah, right on. All right, now you know, for the past few shows, gang, I've been leaning in this direction of just ending up doing this episode so I can clear my head of it and get into some other subjects. So after this one, I'll come off it for a while, you know, from the sociopath episode. And because I don't like that the majority of our species collectively lets a few take our kindness for cheapness. All right, to another religion to reject, where Kim opened my eyes to how atheist groups are leaning on Dawkins and Hitchens and Harris and quoting them as if they're writing the new scriptures and that their word is infallible, even though some of these guys can be a bit misogynistic. So I enjoyed doing that and writing a nice long monologue for that. And I wanted to engage in a domestic companionship, raising a child my own way instead of following tradition and wanting to do funerals my own way instead of bowing to an authority, a noun, the power to give rights to others, make decisions, and enforce obedience. All right, absolute authority over subordinates, the right to act in a specified way, delegated from one person or organization to another. One thing I found when somebody was looking, her name's Janet Rifkin, writing a thesis toward the theory of the law of patriarchy. This is back in 1980, and in defining patriarchy, an authoritative system, she called it any kind of group or organization in which males hold dominant power and determine what part females shall and shall not play, with capabilities assigned to women that are relegated generally to the mystical and aesthetic and excluded from the practical and political realms, these realms being regarded as separate but mutually exclusive. That's almost like, you see where they said the, to the mystical, you know, the magical, and the aesthetic. So, like, be godlike and be pretty while all those closet atheist men go make the decisions about your transvaginal probe. Now, authority, you know, just the way our species does that. Now, some people may have heard about this, but I know it doesn't get talked about much. It's mostly been dissolved, but, you know, a lot of things are still gone bad. You know, you look back into 1652 with the Dutch East India Company, and these guys needed to set up a rest station because they're busting their asses working, right? And they set it up along the route from Europe to India. And when the Dutch, they set up a little spot down in southern Africa in the 17th century, but it wasn't with the intent of colonizing this place, right? The Dutch East India Company, they're rounding the Cape of Good Hope in 1652, and they came ashore, and they wanted to build a supply station for trade and ships and along the spice route. And you know, regardless of their initial intentions, the Dutch settlement in southern Africa, it quickly proved to be a disastrous situation for the native population. As Europeans, including the French and the British as well, the British, real dirty players those guys were, and they quickly followed behind the Dutch, and they did so in smaller numbers. And, of course, they brought with them the ideology that we now call white supremacy. And it was common at the time. It says it's common at the time in the article. I think it's common now, mentally, for a lot of people. And the Dutch settlers, for their part, they bought slaves with them, and they started introducing to South Africa the concept of white domination over people of color, or as I would like to say these days, people with melanin, because science has showed us what that color is, so people with melanin. And at this time, with the Dutch arrival, the nation of South Africa actually didn't fucking exist. Right? People didn't say, hey, I'm from South Africa. Nobody was saying that. Right, you were saying what tribe you were from, and maybe, hey, this is our spot, all right? We hunt here, we barbecue here, we have a powwow there, this is our spot. They didn't say, I'm from South Africa. Now, that region, it was comprised of loosely connected chiefdoms. Let's say that word clearly, chiefdoms, you know, just guys that are chiefs, you know, just one dude that runs the block, maybe runs, you know, 25 to 50 people. He's running the spot, but he's not, you know, he's not running a whole nation. And these little separate societies, and they're based on farming and ranching, hunter-gathering. We've all heard these words before. They're it was inhabited primarily by what you call black Africans, or just humans with melanin. Oppression of these native people, it began within just a few years of the Dutch arrival. And when negotiating for land or goods, when it proved to be a little difficult, just a little challenging, the Dutch raiders, they would enter native territories on horseback and answer any resistance with gunfire. All right, you got a spear and a bow and arrow. You could put in some work, but, I mean, guns, that was a major technological advancement. So you're just, when they come at you with guns, you're done. And they ran off the indigenous peoples right off of their land. And these people, eventually, they had no choice but to just either fucking perish or just be servants, air quotes, of the Dutch, working the land that was taken from them by force with these goddamned guns, all right? And then thus, they established an authority, and the story does not get better, all right? Now, this general process, it led over the course of about a century to widespread white domination in southern Africa. Now, as these Dutch colonists moved further and further inland, you know, away from the ocean, they were the primary colonizing force, which I mean to keep saying they, to me, I think it should just be the guns were the primary colonizing force until about the mid-1700s, when some British activity picked up in the region. They started coming down more. And by the end of that century, when Britain just said, fuck it, we're just going to claim this colony and this region, which is inhabited and primarily by marginalized African majority, the ruling class was slave-holding whites. I like they moved into the word slave from servant in this article now. A long struggle unfolded between the Dutch and the British, and with Britain ultimately gaining control in the early 19th century, South Africa was now a British colony, and slavery was outlawed. At which point, you know, the Dutch, they're like, ah, Jesus Christ, all right. So the Dutch are like, all right, these master-slave relations, they're going to be replaced with master-servant laws, and it put white supremacy on the books. So really, they didn't get rid of the slavery. They changed the name, and, you know, it's like handing out ID cards now. Everybody get your Social Security card. You are a something now. You're not just this slave. You're a servant, you know. Give them a uniform and a chef coat. Now, meanwhile, the British rule was not well received by the large Dutch population, who defiantly continued pushing further into the interior of the land, taking over more territory, destroying more tribes. And what's more, the discovery of diamonds and gold in the 1860s led to vicious industrialization, and this pushed deeper into rural interiors, and an increasing number of Africans were forced to abandon their agrarian lifestyles that had always fed their families, and they had to start earning a living in mines. I've mentioned this before, gang, where it's like, I do a job, but my job is useless to the species, to the ecosystem. It's worthless. I just do my job to generate our magic little invention called money for the corporation. Really, it does nothing for the species. And that's what this is. What their original lifestyle, the hunter-gatherer, that was just good for the species, and it did not harm the ecosystem. Now they have to go work in mines so that they can make money and buy food instead of just waking up in the morning and going to get it. Now, those past requirements whereby now blacks had to carry identification cards at all times that indicated where they were and where they were not allowed to enter, and this would spread beyond the mines and become a key component of, here's the magic word, apartheid control. Yes, folks, we're in the story of apartheid. And think about it, they had to carry identification documents at all times. I mean, why would you have to carry them all times? I guess because you can get checked at any time for not being where you're supposed to be. Sounds like Arizona today, which is why earlier in the article where it said the white supremacy used to be the top thing, and I say that's still there. They just code it in different words, all right? Now let me pause and correlate that. Now, the South Africa Act, this unified various regions of the British colony to a single South Africa presided over by a now centralized, what they call an Afrikaner government. They spelled it with a K, Afrikaner. It was a core founding principle of the new South Africa, which was a dominion of whites over non-whites. Notably, black and other non-white Africans were banned from holding political office. A delegation of black Africans traveled to Britain to protest, where they were ignored. And under its new governing rights, the first government of the unified South Africa allotted about 93% of the nation's land to whites. Say it again. Under the new governing rights, the first government of the unified South Africa allotted about 93% of the nation's land to whites. And they only made up 20% of the population. They come in with guns. They take away your hunter-gatherer lifestyle, give you this job getting gold and diamonds. They make you carry papers to show where you can and cannot go. And then they just write it in that this is legit, that we're supposed to have 93% of this land and 23% of the population because we have guns and we're white and we're better than you. Authority. Now, enacted under the leadership of General Louis Botha, South Africa's first prime minister, they put in the Native Lands Act of 1913. And this was the beginning of the end of any semblance of a social, political, and economic independence of non-whites. The 80% majority would now be living on about 7% of the nation's least desirable land. And you think about a neighborhood of houses and how many people can really live there, because you have a house, you have a yard, a driveway, a street, you know, another house. And then how many people can you pack into a housing project? Seems a bit similar to me, all right? They're really just doing the exact same thing there. All right, 7% of the nation's most undesirable land, where drastically insufficient housing and resources led to the quick spread of disease and famine. And under this same law, non-whites were also prohibited from buying land outside of their allotted territories and from entering white territories unless in the service of white employers. Then they shoot for the Population Registration Act. Now, this was an act in 1950. It required each inhabitant of South Africa to be classified and registered in accordance with their racial characteristics as part of the system of apartheid. Social rights, political rights, educational opportunities, economic status were largely determined by the group in which an individual belonged. There were three basic racial classifications under this law. You had black and white and colored, spelled with the U in it, and this was called mixed in Indians. Now, that is, the Indians are South Asians from a former British India, and these were the descendants. And they were later added as a fourth and separate classification, as they were seen as having no historical right to the country. That's an actual quote that they had in the act, was that these people have no historical right to the country. These guys that came in with the guns and began this system of apartheid are telling other people, you have no historical right to the country. Us 20%, we're telling you guys that you have no right. Now, the Group Areas Act, it was the title of actually three acts in the Parliament of South Africa enacted under this apartheid government of South Africa. The acts assigned racial groups to different residential and business sections in urban areas in a system of urban apartheid. And an effect of the law was to exclude non-whites from living in the most developed areas, which were restricted to the whites. It caused many non-whites to have to commute large distances from their homes in order to be able to work. The law led to non-whites being forcibly removed from living in the wrong areas, and the non-white majority were given much smaller areas to live in than the white minority, who owned most of the country for some reason. And they passed laws that that non-whites carry passbooks now. All right, you had your ID card. Holy shit, it's 1950. Let's get you a passbook. We're upgrading this shit, buddy. And they had to have their passbook to enter the white parts of the country, of course, as employees only. Now you move into the Bantu Homelands Act. It was a denaturalization law passed during the apartheid era, again, of South Africa, that changed the status of the inhabitants of the Bantustans, called Black Homelands, and the Bantus, so that they were no longer actually even citizens of South Africa. All right, you come in, you give them these new jobs, you upgrade their paperwork, and you know what? Fuck it, you're not even a citizen anymore. All right, and the aim was to ensure that white South Africans came to make up the majority of the de jure population. Then they moved it into the Bantu Education Act, because at first you got to make them non-citizens, then you got to re-educate them to your own style. And what came of this act, now this is when a lot of video was coming in, you know, like Warner Brothers was coming in making a lot of film, and people could see what they could do with video and film. And what some guys found in the research, in these films, they would show the like young black students, young Bantus, that their past ancestors were just like dumb and wild and could barely survive on their own, and these Dutch and British people had to come and save them from themselves. So they're just rewriting history to teach these people that they are inferior. Now, I wanted to talk about that apartheid business, and that word actually means apart in that old Africana language. So like it's one of those words. It's not actually a bad word itself. It's just associated with horrific acts and horrific behavior of authority. So we don't. So we tend to just not like that word when it really just means apart. I want to dig into that. Now we look at authority as a job. That is a bad thing. I mean, how easy is it for that to attract sociopaths, as we talked about and defined in an earlier episode? All right, $223,000, $193,000, $230,000, $400,000, and $174,000. These are yearly salaries for Speaker of the House, major and minority party leaders, Vice President, President, and then a whole bunch of representative and Senate seats. Like $174,000 is like the punk money. And when you look at the payscale.com, thanks to those people for doing this research, and they look at median earnings of people in the United States between the ages of 55 and 64, which is the median age of U.S. Congress and cabinet members, and a lot of these people hold a bachelor's degree and work full-time, $73,000 a year on average, while these the Congress and cabinet members, those are the $174,000 guys. So it's kind of like, I mean, if you're fairly, I mean, $73,000, right, that's not punk money. You're chilling, right? You're making that, especially if you're single, you're making that. But it's like you could be getting $174,000 a year. I think making authority a job is just not smart for our species, knowing how we function mentally and knowing how we latch on to privilege. And that's definitely privilege. Like, you're getting a ridiculous amount of money to be the guy that makes the rules. And I think it is relatively anti-pragmatic in our already silly, shaky invention of capitalism, which is our sandcastle in a hurricane that we just pad with more of our precious invention of money, that we divvy out so much of this fluid resource to individual humans, and for doing what is little to no service to our species. I'll say this a lot. If your job is not a service to the species or the ecosystem, it's really not that useful. And should you really be getting so much of this resource that we invented called money for, what, wearing a suit and banging a gavel? Like, get out of here. Now, let me just bring up a reminder from a past barbershop episode from a study we cited, the Milgram experiment, which was the experiment of obedience to authority figures, and it was a series of psychological experiments in the Yale University, and it was Stanley Milgram that ran that, and he put his findings in his 1974 book. And like what I said, I got to reiterate, what I saw in that Milgram experiment was that when they were delivering the electroshock, you could find that the people are more concerned with the authority telling them to give the shock than the person that they are shocking. So we need to check authority. We need to watch authority and how it works and maybe get rid of a lot of it. Like, a lot of authority I don't think our species needs. I think we're just used to it, and I think that the people who are in these positions of authority or people who are, let's say, heirs to these positions of authority just by the last name they have, they want to keep it in order. Like, it's them that really want it. Like, how many of the people really want all this authority hanging over us? I mean, with what's going on today, I don't want somebody else telling my neighbor if they can use the word married or not and have hospital visits, you know, and that whole business and get the tax breaks and what have you. Get that guy out of there. That's a useless person, unless they're doing something that's good for the species or good for the environment. Yeah. I'm going on. I just droned on for 27 minutes. Anaya, Jesus Christ, you want to put anything in there on authority?
Oh, well, I was going to mention a little bit about that, too. It's like it's funny that people tend to really want, I guess you could say, pick and choose which rules get to be established, how they should be established, and what things are more important or how they're going to be done. For example, you know, we were talking a few minutes ago about the marriage equality thing, and a recent little thing on my timeline on Facebook kind of blew up with people complaining about the fight for marriage equality and talking about how no one's doing much in regards to the fact that trans individuals and things like that are being killed, et cetera. And, you know, I listened to all of that, and it always frustrates me. It's one of the reasons I had to remove myself from the platform that I was on my old Twitter, because I feel like people don't realize when they are not being constructive or they're not actually adding to the cause. And I mean that in the sense that the things you discuss are important, and these things are being worked on. Now, there may be other people that may have more money into pushing something else, but But those things are being worked on, because just like you're passionate about this, there's a lot of other people out there, but you're not seeking out those resources. You're not doing anything about it. The only thing that you're doing is sitting online and typing about it. You're writing about it. And then you criticize other people who do support one of the major efforts and try to say that they're not doing anything because so since they support that effort and you have a problem with that effort, then that means they don't care anything about all this other stuff. It's like people want to try to stretch so many things so thin, and if we spend all this time talking about stuff, I mean, of course we have to discuss a problem, but if we spend all this time just talking, when are we ever going to do anything? Why do we want to spend all our time arguing about something?
That's
exactly what
go
the
ahead.
Supreme Court is doing, you know? That's the same thing the Supreme Court is doing.
That stung me too. Yeah, I don't I physically don't do many things, and I've been labeled. I haven't identified myself as this, but I've been labeled as like an ally to, you know, like to the LGBT community. And I always tell people, if I'm an ally, I am the laziest, most useless ally ever. I am in my pajama pants and a Long John shirt doing a podcast. Like, I am not out there picketing. I've never been to any parade. We were talking about this before. Like I've never done like a AIDS walk or any of that stuff. And it's like I have the time too. I should get up there and go do something. Jesus Christ, get active. You know, I'm not some perfect person. I'm not some sort of standard bearer. I'm not some rule holder of morality. But I feel like my mentality and my behavior is on the right side of history. Like, nothing that I say will be quoted 100 years from now as, and this is what was holding us back. I don't think that anything I'm saying will be seen as, like, this is what was keeping our species backwards. And to close out this segment, I've gone over my 30 minutes I had planned because I like to run my mouth a lot. As human beings, with this thing that some, maybe many, will call free will, I could, you could, we could, all of us could just not go to our jobs tomorrow. All right, the butcher, the baker, the candlestick maker, the Dallas Cowboys defense coordinator, the Army, the Navy, the Marines, the cops, guerrilla soldiers, and indigenous, we can all stop. The only reason why we have a president, a prime minister, a king, a pope, a representative, a duke, a duchess, a general, the only reason they exist is because we all keep agreeing and accepting that they do. We apply these magic words to these fellow humans that suddenly elevate them to be more worthy than thou, to have a better understanding than thee, to hold a position of authority. If you are a person who was honestly convinced that the Abrahamic deity Yahweh exists, and also that a Jesus exists, the Pope is not your boss. You are still your own person. If you are not convinced of this, Richard Dawkins is not your boss. You can think for yourself. If you are a drag performer, I already had this written. I'm not saying this just because you're on the line. If you're a drag performer, RuPaul is not your boss. You can have your own opinion on what is rocking on the runway. If you're a hip-hop head, you are not required to have a Notorious B.I.G. verse memorized. You don't have to do that. If you're a feminist, Anita is not your boss. And that, my little jelly beans, is called a segue. Now, how did Alfred get me talking about video games? Because, excuse me, I know nothing about video games, but they got this video game trope thing. Have you seen that, Anair?
You know nothing about video games? Where have you been?
I'm weak on them. I'm so weak on the video games. Like, I could just spit out the few games that I'm really familiar with off the top of my head. Mortal Kombat, Halo, and barely Halo 2, and Super Mario Brothers I played in 88, excuse me, and Mario Kart in like 94, 93, and F-Zero in like 93, and Tekken 2 in 97, and Grand Theft Auto San Andreas in 2006, I think I got that game. And, like, that's the extent of my video game knowledge. Off the top of my head, I don't even have to do any research. I don't have to go in the garage and look or anything. That's it for me in games. I'm weak on them.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I think I discussed this before when I called in once before. But I used to, I guess you could say, consider myself an avid gamer. But I mentioned before that to me the games have gone down a lot. What I can say is I love the fact that so many of the games that have been out are so much more progressive in their ideas of, I guess you could say, control than we are as far as humanity goes. And it shows that these designers, these creators and stuff like that, like a lot of people say that those ideas don't come from nowhere. Like, I played one video game once before called Star Ocean, where they're going through the whole game, and midway through the game, they find out that they're in a video game and that their world is being erased by the creator who sent something into the game to erase the whole game. So they get to a point where they have to find a way to get out of the game, and they destroy the creator so they continue their own life. Now, you can't tell me that those kind of ideas and stuff don't come from people that know, and they're not taking the bullshit of accepting this creator bullshit.
They're not accepting authority. I love it. I love it. You just played into the show. It's like a movie where they say the title of the movie in the movie, and you're like, oh, holy shit, Forrest Gump. Yeah, this one, it was about the tropes. This person, Anita, see, I totally got this one from Alfred. If he gets in later, we'll go ahead and revisit this segment if we get past it before he gets home from his task. And she was talking about how it's a damsel in distress thing with video games, and that
I saw that.
Yeah, the one where she says it's affecting young boys, and first thing I notice is that it's this word tropes. I'm like, oh, my goodness, unusual word. Whoever's talking must be smarter than me, and I need to take them at face value. Clearly snarky, you know, because I'm like, what is this, you know? And I didn't go into it thinking I'm going to disagree because I typically agree with feminists. But then, you know, when you start talking about things like video games influencing people, it takes me back to me being a kid in the 90s listening to hardcore hip-hop records, but all the people saying, that's gangster rap and it's going to make you crazy. Oh, yeah, I'm real crazy now. Humans are nuts because humans are nuts, not because of video games that are younger than the screens they are played on have made people nuts. Our species has already been wacky, all right? We invented this thing called stoning people to death, like, long before video games. All right, our species is already fucking wacky. I notice something that makes it hard to take her serious immediately is that she has all comments disabled, and you're like, all right, that's already annoying because you've closed off conversation, not just from people that might disagree and have a good point, but people that might agree, too. You just kind of said, fuck everybody, I'm turning off my comments. But then you also have ratings disabled. You can't even thumb it up or thumb it down. Like, you don't even want criticism. You seem to have created your own bubble, and you are going to wrap that bubble in steel.
Like Fox News.
Oh, man, Jesus Christ, I did. I put that at the closing monologue for this one, too. Yes, she is well inside there. And then one thing I looked at, sniffing around about it, was people that agree with her, they are hard on, man. It's almost like she is their Jesus. Like, they're not hearing it if you disagree with her. Like, one of the first things I found was a funny, snarky meme that disagreed with her. And it had a picture of her, and it was, you know, just a meme, and it read, raised enough money to make a video game and makes a homemade video complaining about video games. And that's what she did. I mean, I think it was like nearly $160,000 raised to make the video. And it's like, why didn't you just make a feminist game? Just make a game. Make it an iPhone app.
There's that, and you can't discount the fact that these, like all of these games that she was mentioning, are ancient games. They're old, very, very old games. The gaming industry has moved very, very far away from that. Now, I can admit, of course, you do have the instances of where these characters are still looked at to be, where they're still looked at to be sexy if they are a main character. I do see, I guess, the problem with that. But, I mean, you know, she mentioned a lot of them not being main characters or anything like that, but you're in a time now where you have main characters like Lara Croft from Tomb Raider. In one of the first Resident Evils, you had your main characters were interchangeable between a man and a female. On games like Mass Effect 3, you can choose a male or a female, and you have complete customization of that female, et cetera. So it doesn't have to appeal to any of the stereotypes for women. Your woman doesn't have to be over-sexualized. You have a complete choice of her outfit and all of that. So it's like we've come a long way, but she chose to isolate only the video games that haven't made any progression. Why? Because they're ancient classic games, and people grown to love them don't see any reason to change them. You're now talking about a brand that's gone on for hundreds of years. Why fix it if it ain't broke when you're talking about money? You know what I mean?
Man, and I think that's intentional because, you know, despite her smile lines, she is Generation Y, all right? She was born in 84. She knows everything that you know. She just intentionally did not include this. Like, one of the funny things in the video games, when she showed clips of the kidnapping of the damsel in distress and that the hero has to fight to achieve his stolen property, that's not at, when you read the storylines of the games, that's not in there. That's what she put in her rhetoric because it's a trigger word. It gets people to just, it gets their ears to perk up. Hell, I jump up when I hear that. Referring to a woman as property, I disagree with that. And I do. I disagree with that too, but that's not, you just lied right there, Anita. And thanks to, shout out to Inuatinua. I cannot pronounce your name, ma'am. Big shout out to you for doing that research, and I was able to look it up. And looking up on something else, yes, the 160,000. Yeah, that's something. Her followers, they don't like when you bring up that $160,000. They don't want to speak on that at all. And one thing that isn't known is what it was spent on. You don't know what was spent on what. Now, of course, somebody is already thinking, that's none of your business, Father Teresa. You just read your Bible. And that sounds familiar, doesn't it? Kind of like church funding and what goes to the poor kid's shoe drive and what goes to the pastor's alligator shoes. And this sort of blind following of your intellectual authority shows that it's not just religion that can do this or invoke this. It's when you make another human a stranger, your standard bearer, and you just drop those eyelids and take a leap of faith on their word, you're being just like that Christian. You are not walking by sight. You're walking by faith on her. So I say when the papers come up that I don't deserve to see because I didn't and wouldn't donate, but maybe you did, I don't know, then you can judge the character of the person behind the character. But for now, she is just a person telling you what you want to hear and releasing endorphins in your brain because she tapped into your reward system, making you feel warm and self-righteous all over.
Achievement unlocked.
Whoa, what'd you say there?
I made an Xbox reference to what you just said, achievement unlocked.
Oh, you're goddamn right. And I'll tell you what, if you want the straight dope with feminism and you really you go to Roads to Reality or Annalise Fonzer, and I have Annalise Fonzer's link in the show notes, and because Anita is a weak source and she is a Hitchens, a Dawkins, and a Harris to her followers. Neither she nor her lemmings will admit anything about the money or that if she wasn't white, she wouldn't have received that salary to sit around playing video games. Imagine if this was a black woman tried to raise that money to talk about to make the video game video. Come on now.
She would have been a lazy welfare, fill in the blank, a lazy welfare bat that, Why be candid? She would have been a lazy welfare whore that sits around and plays video games.
Yep, yeah, get up and get a job and go make money to play your video games. And, you know, and something else that's unimpressive is that she just spews talking points. She goes with the easily digestible. She takes it to this online pseudo-feminist community and reaches for low-hanging fruit. All right, it'd be the same if I went to the black side of town with a Jesus T-shirt with some bullshit message about uplifting and that we need the Lord to save us from all the sagging pants and gangster rap, and I could get that same easy dollar by telling people what they've been programmed by an authority to want to hear. She is a pundit of the new age. She is a Fox News feminist, and I'm a fan of pundits. You know, after seeing Sarah Palin on her way out of that gig, they should have replaced her with a neater instead of Herman Cain, and she could be their answer to S.E. Cup, the so-called atheist of the so-called liberal station. She's no feminist or a humanist. She's a capitalist, and I respect her work ethic, because as long as we live in the system of capitalism, hey, you gotta get paid. All right, now, New Hampshire, folks, they're talking about private prisons. Now, private prisons, we know about those, right? You ever heard of a private prison called American Correctional Association? They were founded in 1983, and in their mission statement, they place an emphasis on being socially responsible. They're a socially responsible organization and a strong corporate citizen. Doesn't that sound adorable, a corporate citizen? And first and foremost, they believe in protecting human life and dignity, and they believe that by giving back to our communities and providing economic value to their employees, their government partners, communities, and investors, they will continue to build a sustainable enterprise that has proven its value over decades of service. All right, the CCA facilities operate in accordance with the robust standards of the Independent American Correctional Association. It is a gold standard for correctional management. More than 93% of CCA facilities are ACA accredited, with an average score of 99.2%. Now, with that known, why don't we look at an article on Ohio privatized prison food? Now, in an effort to cut costs, the Governor John Kasich, a Republican of Ohio, he wants to hire a private food vendor to feed 50,179 inmates in the Ohio prison system. The administration argues that the decision to outsource prison food will save as much as $16 million a year, and this is motivated by a huge state deficit. Ohio has become a laboratory in prison reform with mixed results. The state sold a prison to the Corrections Corporation of America, which is that private prison company, and they sold it in 2011, only to discover abysmal conditions far below state standards in sanitation, food quality, hygiene, and health care. However, Ohio's new sentencing reforms are saving the state millions while diverting nonviolent offenders away from prisons and into educational and rehabilitative programs. Now, Ohio's taste for privatization is likely to make prison food even less appetizing than it already is. The private vendors, they can skimp on food quality and quantity and staff in order to make a profit. Now, unlike the state-run cafeterias, the private vendors servicing juvenile detention facilities can skip the federal nutrition guidelines for school lunches. The State Department of Youth Services, which has 469 youths at four detention facilities, it spends $6.18 million a year, or $27.60 per inmate a day for food service. said spokeswoman Kim Parcell. The costs are higher because youths don't help with food prep or cooking. The meals adhere to the federal guidelines for school lunches, and the teenage detainees have higher caloric needs, she said. The state receives $5.51 a day per youth as reimbursement from the National School Lunch Program. Switching to this private vendor is expected to save about $1.2 million a year, she said. The Ohio Civil Service Employees Association, which is a union that represents some 10,000 prison workers, it warns that a contractor will pay low wages, it will hire fewer people, and dish out less food to make a profit. Roughly 450 state workers in the DYS and the DRC could end up losing their jobs. Though some could apply for other state jobs or perhaps be hired by the contractor. Now, Tim Schaefer, the OCSEA operations director, said complaints about inmate food may sound like whining, but they contribute to the safety and security of a prison. As a former corrections officer, I can tell you one of the best things in the world is a full inmate. They want to sit down and chill out, Schaefer said. Inmates are fed a heart-healthy diet that features a rotating menu of dinners such as sloppy joes and fajitas and chicken and biscuits. The poor quality and sanitation have sparked multiple deadly riots at private prisons run by the corporations like CCA and the GEO Group in one prison, and inmates were fed soup filled with worms, while other prisons served burritos and brownies contaminated with human feces. The cost of serving claim for the plan is also dubious. Ohio's last flirtation with the R mark in 1998 ended because the company insisted on being paid by daily inmate count rather than by actual meals served, which drove up the cost by $2 million. Imagine how much they could make on a hunger strike.
Worms.
Yes, worms and feces. Now, let's see. Now, Ohio running a vote. I wanted to look into this. Excuse me. I am full of phlegm, people. I am disgusting. Like I said earlier, it is the gosh darned allergy season. I'm gross right now. This is from March 22nd. We're just doing this show right here on the 26th. And New Hampshire held a vote today to prohibit the private prisons in their Granite State. And that sounds fantastic. I like that. And this is a progress that the industry has made elsewhere and around the country. New Hampshire said, to hell with that. The House on Thursday voted to forbid the executive branch from privatizing the state prison system, saying that to do so would shirk the state's constitutional responsibility to rehabilitate inmates. The 197-136 roll call by Democratic-controlled House, it sent the bill 443 to the Senate, where Republicans hold a slim 13-11 majority, and the bill's fate is uncertain at best. The legislation, while prohibiting a private prison, allows the governor to enter into a temporary contract with a private provider during times of corrections emergency with the approval of executive council. I'm a little funky about that. I don't know about that one, Raymond. Oh, you there?
That's a little,
like that's slick. Like somebody is going to manufacture something. Yeah, I don't trust that one. But we'll stay on that. But you know, the next show is in 2 weeks. I might have to speak on it on another show earlier before that. Now, I have to just note that a church in Scotland, they are warning you that a bill to make marriage laws more inclusive will allow Jedi Knights to officiate over wedding ceremonies. Oh, no! The Reverend Ivor Martin recently told the British broadcast that the Free Church of Scotland opposed Scotland's marriage and civil partnership bill because it expands law to include non-religious groups. And there are loads of people in a diverse society like this for whom belief can mean virtually anything. The Flat Earth Society, the Jedi Knight Society, who knows, Martin said. I am not saying that we don't give a place to that kind of personal belief, but when you start making allowances for marriages to be performed within those categories, then you're all over the place. The Scottish government, which is now holding public consultation on the bill, said that it was designed to accommodate humanists, who now must be classified as religious in order to perform nuptials. Our current consultation covers not only the introduction of same-sex marriage, but also the detail. I'm having those Rachel Maddow mistakes. The detail of important protections in relation to religious bodies and celebrants and freedom of speech and education. Sounds fun. I don't see what the problem is. I think this Martin guy is just being a tight ass that doesn't want to have fun. All right, the government.
Let's just really consider the types of marriages people have anyway. He's acting as if people don't already have all types of creative, different kinds of out there weddings. Believe me, I've seen some of them. They have shows about this kind of stuff, man. They have shows where people get married underwater, or people get married while skydiving out of buildings and shit. People get married to certain themes, and there actually have been people that have been cosplayers. They're into cosplaying, so they get married as their favorite characters. Like, this stuff already happens. What are you talking about? And who cares?
Yeah, I mean, and you know, there's always that thing that we can run back to. I mean, just look at what a lot of celebrities and Newt Gingrich do. And when somebody starts talking sanctity of marriage, that was already out the window. And frankly, was there ever any real sanctity in marriage, in owning a woman to have her as an accessory in your house and maybe something you can get your rocks off on every once in a while? How sacred is that? Is there really any sanctity? There never was. The sanctity of marriage is amazing. Made up idea, and like we said before on the past show, that they're not trying to make sense. These people have a privileged position of authority, and they simply want to protect that position. It's all they actually care about. We didn't get Alfred in to talk about his wedding on this one, but I'm glad that Annihilation came in and got involved, man. I like having you in the barbershop, and I see your pictures on the Facebook. You always got a fresh cut. All right, we need you in here chopping wigs.
most certainly. Anytime that I'm not busy at work. Like the busy worker bee that I tend to be.
Yep. And then, and now as far as your job, we're not going to say what your job is here on the show, but does your job do anything for the species, for the ecosystem, for the environment, anything?
I don't know. I guess you could say it. Well, I'm protecting people's property, so. I guess in a way, maybe. I don't know. I hate it.
Hey, keep the hands off that coffee table. We need that coffee table so that our children can be educated better and we can further the intellectual curiosity of our species. And we are hitting our hour, and I guess we're going to have to go into that theme music. Yeah, we can skip over that kid with the killer shirt in court that flipped off the family. I just really want to say that, I mean, that little shit is crazy, or he really just doesn't give any fucks about other members of his species. And we just got, you know, if you got to put them in a little box somewhere, put them in a little box somewhere. If you got to euthanize them. That little shit is broken. All right, and this is the barbershop. You're under Black Free Thinkers. This was fantastical.
All righty, man. I'm out. Gotta
right
go
on.
Do hot stuff.
Yep.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Peace.
Black free thinkers, where we walk by sight with a bright flashlight to illuminate night. free thoughts. We don't walk by faith in the lost mind state, cause it's not quite safe. We don't recruit, we're not peers from a church, so don't be spooked, we're not here to convert. The only truth that's not pulled from a text, show me proof that's not good after death. This is the challenge to think for yourself. Bring it out of the bottle and speak what you felt. 310-982-4273 to get through. A venue for community, and this is the zone. If you'd like to speak with Kim, then pick up the phone. 310-982-4273 to get through. The next tree branch is Rainer, and it's best you listen to reason, science, and skepticism. It's loaded with straight facts, inspiring and dope. She can make Bill Nye retire his lab coat. Humans are hilarious, and every other Friday I'd like to hear commentary on culture, people. So I hit up Super Mario and bring in Emmeline to discuss why we're capable of ultra evil. It's normal for my brain to have a two-way street, but if there's collisions, well then you got to just mention it. And don't be afraid of where the truth may lead, ignoring your position of cognitive dissonance. When Father Teresa preaches, it's hard to stop. So Kim paired me up with Alfred in the barbershop. I have extended family and all these places now, as the free thought tree pollinates around. Yeah. This is the challenge to think for yourself. Break it out of the bottle and speak what you felt. 310-982-4273 to get